Good morning, and welcome to Making a Change for Good. Good morning, Ashwini.
Morning, Chris, or good afternoon.
So our assignment for today, or from yesterday, actually, the self-hating message is that we are, that as we are not enough. Enough for what? What does that mean? If you were enough, then what? Assignment. What does self-hate say you are missing? RL, what you see. All right, let's hear from our first caller.
Oh.
First caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Miriam. I just jumped out of my skin when it said unmuted. Oh, my goodness. So what I'm seeing for participation is that if I avoid participating to avoid criticism or judgment, it doesn't work because I still get it from conditioning.
How well stated. Yeah. So if you're told that you don't participate, so in participation, if you're not actually participating because you're afraid of judgment or criticism, I project from somebody or something external, then you still receive it from the internal voices.
Mm-hmm. That is 100% accurate.
It is, isn't it?
And it's really it's wonderful to see because I had never seen it that way before, and it's like there's still like this great big wall of resistance, and so what I'm looking at now is how to take that next step, or what is stopping me from taking that next step.
Uh-huh.
But it is a great big wall of resistance.
Uh-huh. So, Miriam, I think that's why we try to do this on a level of a recording or a process map, right? Because resistance is just a label, and it doesn't give you much information. So I don't want to, I don't feel like it. It's just simply ego. And so one way of working with that, if it's at that level, is simply redirect the attention and just do what it is that your heart wants to do. But if you're not clear about what's the quality of the resistance, so for example, if it is, I don't want to do this because I'm going to be judged, then we explore that further, right? So what is it telling you the consequences are going to be? Are you going to be experiencing sensations that you just can't stand? Or what is it that what is the flavor of the resistance? And that might be helpful to explore a little bit.
Yes, because and what I find interesting is that I'm preparing my response for the email class, and I'm seeing how when ego is screaming and carrying on, it's much easier to disengage than when it's at a more subtle level.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And right now it's really subtle.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So it's, as we practice more, the grosser forms of the self-hate are easier to catch on to and see them for what they are. But when they're subliminal or subtle, as you just said, it's harder. Yeah. So what is the flavor of not enough that you're seeing?
I think it's fear. I think it's fear of being found lacking, being mm-hmm. Being criticized, not doing it right. Mm-hmm. But I do see how it's 98.9% internal.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I've just seen that very recently. So I find that very interesting to explore further. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so all of the criticism and the judgment are related to inadequacy, that somehow or the other you're insufficient to do X, Y, Z.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and so clearly if we're inadequate, we're told we're inadequate, then there is that experience of not wanting to engage if we're identified with that, right?
Yes.
If I can't do it, then why would I want to?
Yes, it's a catch-22.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Anyway, I very much appreciate all the all the participation from Sangha and everything, because the open air archives and everything is such a treasure. It's really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It is, isn't it?
We're yes.
surrounded by practice opportunities.
Yes, we are. Yes. Mm. Yep. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Miriam.
Have a nice day.
You too.
Thank you, Miriam. And it's funny, that first point seems really important, that when we're identified, self-hate is just going to be a part of it, and there's no escaping it.
Mm-hmm.
That we can believe that somehow, if I'm just the right person, that I can get around it, but it's just not so. The self-hate is just always there.
Yeah, it's what keeps the identification in place, right?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, let's move to our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Ashwini and Chris. It's Jeff in North Carolina.
Hey, Jeff. What are you saying about being enough?
Yeah. So I was doing the assignment yesterday, and looking at kind of the last 3 days, you know, with the focus on self-hate. What I was looking at went with kind of taking apart what I'd written over the two previous days, at least in terms of this related to looking at participation here, what I was seeing was I'm not compassionate enough. I'm not, according to self-hate, of course, not wise enough. I'm not willing enough. I'm not courageous enough. All of that kind of stuff, all of these spiritual qualities, ways in which I don't measure up, is basically what it looks like if I take apart what self-hate tells me.
Uh-huh. So you're missing all of these very spiritual qualities of courage and willingness and wisdom and all of these things, and I project that insufficiency is why you can't participate. In other words, all these are prerequisites to participation, and since you don't have them, then what's the point?
That's interesting. Because the content I've been looking at this time around is being in practice a long time, but not doing much to support practice in terms of being involved. Not that anybody's asking me to do that necessarily, but just looking at the resistance internally, or why haven't I done that, or other things kind of beyond myself, you know, getting involved politically or something like that. And so that's the content I've been looking at, and self-hate is both saying that I'm the wrong person for not doing that, and even bringing it up that, well, no one's asking you to participate in terms of supporting practice, so who are you to do that? So it's beating me up on both sides. Some of it is. Some of it, yeah, there is definitely a story of inadequacy as part of the other part of it is I don't have enough time. Those are the two things, but you're right. There's a story of inadequacy that says why I'm not good enough to be. Yeah, that definitely is the story for sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's very interesting, right, Jeff, because I project from what you just said around the content, the focus on me is a focus on ego. And if that's a totality of focus, even if we're looking at transcending ego for ourselves, it has the opportunity to say, well, you're focused on yourself, not on other things, right? You're not focused on doing things for anybody but yourself. And that's just an interesting, if we change the pronouns, an interesting definition of egocentricity, right?
So let me see if I'm tracking on this. So if the attention is on ego, then ego has the opportunity to say, well, your attention is on ego. You're only focused on yourself. But whether or not, whatever I'm or anybody is involved in, if the attention is on life, then the attention is on life. I'm not sure if this is part of what you're saying, but it matters less the content of what I'm participating in a lot of ways, as much as where the attention is. I'm not sure if that's what you were saying or not, but...
Not quite, but I think that all of that is somewhat true, right? But I guess what I was pointing to in terms of the content that you were bringing up, right? So I practice for my awakening. Mm. I don't support the practice that assists me to practice for my awakening. That seems to be what conditioning is accusing you of.
Right. Yes.
And
now
I'm pointing at is that when we're focused on when attention is on ego, the whole world is on ego. It's all about me. There's no room for it to be about anything else because the entire space of awareness is taken up by ego. So there are many levels to that, right? Ego is accusing you of being selfish, within quotes, or self-centered, within quotes. But what it's saying is all the attention is on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, right. And part of it is maybe then that I'm allowing that to happen by allowing it to keep me out of some of these things that would take me beyond the ego.
Well, we want to be very careful how we phrase that, right, Jeff? Because once again, it's your allowing it is a self-hating way of phrasing it, right?
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
You should be doing this, but you're not allowed to do this. And if you're allowing for ego to be in your life, then it's also your fault, right? That's trying to solve the problem within the problem set. And so just that awareness of that's what the ego is saying assists us to let it go, right? I'm just going to be here participating and I'm not listening to those voices. And when I'm here I'm part of everything. So I'm participating in all. And from that place, but the action that arises to do is in service of all.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not in the conversation that it's all about me, and I'm not doing something because of some inherent flaw in myself from engaging in the world or in politics or in supporting practice. I'm not indulging in that conversation. And only from that place is there sufficient time and space and love to be part of.
Yeah. Yeah, good. Thank you. I think, I got caught up in kind of looking at a right-wrong duality here and also in a doing kind of mode. But right, it just, but pointing back, I feel like more to being and letting go of that whole conversation.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, we only see it when we see it, right?
That's right. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you, Jeff. And Ashwini, as Jeff was going through that, kind of those two or three things he said to start with, not courageous enough, can't remember the other ones, but that whole list of not enoughs, just really seeing how when conditioning says something like not courageous enough, it implies that there is a certain level of courage that's there already.
Yeah.
And it's just not enough. And so switching the attention over to, well, how much actually is there?
Right. Yeah, I think what you're pointing us to, right, Chris, is that not just taking the assumption that has been made, but to examine the assumption, not just taking it at face value, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And even if we take it literally, right, mm-hmm. not enough, then we can kind of infer that, well, actually, of course, the attention is supposed to be on how much we're lacking. Mm-hmm. We can switch it around to, well, you know, how much is actually there? Or, like mm-hmm. you say, get to that place of not being interested in the conversation. And, you know. Mm. All right. Let's hear from our next caller. Okay. Next caller, you're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Great. Hi. This is Jeannie from Berkeley. Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Hello, Ginny. How are you? What are you seeing about this assignment?
I'm so excited. I overcame 1,000 voices to call in.
Good for you. Good for you.
I do want to, Shwani, this was such a big thing that conditioning, I went blank every time I read an email. And so last weekend I just meditated and sat down and I spent hours and it all came pouring out and I got to see it was like a drug ring. It's so insidious and so tied to so many different areas. This is such a big thing. So I'm so grateful. And so I'm seeing about not being, well, the whole setup is that I have to earn my worth because I'm not just entitled to it. I have to earn it, but then I'm absolutely not capable of doing it. And if I were to participate, I always hurt people. And somehow someone loses if I were really to do what is do what I want.
Uh-huh.
So it's a big stuck situation that I
thought. Oh, my gosh, yeah, because it sounds like a complete no exit process, right? So as you are, you're not enough. You got to earn whatever it is that you you get. You're clearly not competent enough to earn it. And should you do anything in order to, you know, acquire whatever it is that you need, you're certainly going to do it in a way that causes untold harm. And so don't do that. That makes you the bad person for harming people and the wrong person for being who you are that does that. I mean, there's just absolutely no, it's such a stuck is a good word for it. Imagine being caught in that loop of not being able to, I would project, make any moves in any direction because you just can't.
Right. No, and then it follows up with, then if you were a better Zen practitioner, you wouldn't be.
Of course. Of course. Right. But you're not even good enough for that, right? Right, Ginny? That's it. That there's something so totally flawed about you that you can't even do good Zen practice to get yourself out of it. It's so part of the same process.
Yeah, I see that.
Mm-hmm. Good. And so where does that leave you now that you've seen the whole setup? Do you feel less unstuck?
Well, no. What dropped in was that as long as I, it seemed like as long as loving kindness is my intention, then, I see that. Then somehow I feel like I can argue with the voices. But truly, I mean, I see that it's just the fear of the voices telling me that I'm hurting people and telling me all these things that I believe that's the actual setup. So
yes, that's very, underline that because it's so important. What we're paralyzed by is just the fear-mongering of the voices. They're not true. Mm-hmm. As long as I believe them, I believe that I'm harming people. But as Chris said, if we examine that assumption and really pause to consider what my intention is, it's loving kindness. And so from that place of loving kindness, there is no harm that can be done, right? So I just have to keep my attention on loving kindness and not on the voices that say I'm a harmful person.
Right.
Right? Because that's what we are. We are loving kindness. And all the conversation is ever meant to do is to distract us from our experience of ourselves as that.
No, that's absolutely true. There are some situations where you do hurt people, and I'm going to bring up content and say, like, deciding to get a divorce, right? That is the situation where there, loving kindness, well.
Well, that's an interesting one, right, Jeannie? And probably, you know, a total examination of that might be out of the scope of this morning call, and so I would encourage you to call open air and have that conversation. But we might want to just look at whether that's true, right?
I'd love to. Yeah.
Yeah, whether it's true that we actually affect anyone's experience. What's the truth in that? someone's conditioning may be triggered. You might experience pain.
Right.
But mm-hmm. does that mean that you're inflicting harm? It's a very, very interesting place to explore.
It is, and I see that really, I mean, when I'm absolutely letting life live through me, then being in that open-hearted space and making any decision that is from that space.
That's exactly right. I think you put your finger on it. The how mm-hmm. makes all the difference, right? Conditioning makes it all about the what, and what you do is, we're conditioned to believe is either right or wrong, harmful or not harmful, or whatever the duality might be. But from that mm-hmm. centered place, from that open-hearted, loving, kindness place, one has to question whether harm is ever something that is the what. If the how is loving, can the what be harmful?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. It's a subtle place and one we have to practice to stay with, but just not to give those voices any way to harm her, right? Harm Jeannie. That's what they're doing all the time.
Yeah, thanks. No, this has been incredible. Very powerful to see all this.
Mm-hmm, it is. Yeah, and do call back. And we'll see if we can have that conversation or that further exploration.
Thanks.
Thank
Gacha.
You.
Gacha. Thanks for all Sangha. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Jeannie. And one thing that was dropping in for me, Ashwini, was just that description of being so trapped by conditioning and by all of the self-hate that it feels like I'm completely stuck and I can't move. And then, as you were pointing out, as we begin to examine some of the assumptions that are just hidden, implied by the language of self-hate, that we find ourselves kind of popped out into a center place, and the energy moves again. I don't feel stuck. It's like, I've gotten myself unstuck, but I haven't fixed anything.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Awareness transforms.
Exactly. Completely. Yeah. All right. Well, let's hear from our next caller. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi there.
Who is this?
It's Justin in Vermont.
Hey, Justin.
Hi, Ashwini.
What are you seeing?
I'm participating.
We, yes, yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I have sat through a bunch of these calls, listening, not in the queue, and it was feeling very familiar. So decided to do something different.
Uh-huh. So it feels very familiar to be an observer rather than part of, or different kinds of participation, we could say, right, Justin? Because you could just not do the assignment, not be on the calls, and that would be somewhat of a lack of participation, I would project. But
yes,
you just decided to do something different, yeah.
Fortunately, I haven't taken it that far, although sometimes, yeah, conditioning has gotten me a few days behind and some of that. I was really interested in something that Sherry had said early last week. Do you remember her talking about, I believe she was talking about the movement from being identified to being disidentified and how it feels like stepping into an abyss?
Uh-huh. Vaguely. But I think I know where I have a general drift. So what were you seeing about it?
I guess it was really helpful to hear that because I think I hear a lot. And I mean, I think one of the things that keeps me coming back to these calls is hearing people in their own words saying how being present is life-giving and joyous, and I think that gets co-opted by conditioning to say, like, oh, why aren't you just doing that? And instead, you're having this terrible time. And of course, during none of that, am I disidentified? And it just was useful. And I think some of my most useful recordings are trying to support taking that step that feels like it could be into an abyss. Mm-hmm. That actually, yeah, the more I get to do it, feels like it might just be stepping back into a way of being that's completely natural, that I might have even been born with, or...
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, and I that's such an interesting exploration, right, Justin, because what we're looking at is, I don't know, how long have you been doing this practice?
I encountered one of Sherry's books about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I don't know if this is your experience, right, that as we practice, we assist ourselves to move from living in identification and disidentifying periodically to living in disidentification and getting identified periodically, right? But it's a trajectory. It's a trajectory, and that experience of the abyss that we're pointing to is that when I'm disidentified, completely disidentified, that I'm not identified with any aspect of ego, it can feel a bit, within quotes, disorienting, right? Because who am I if I'm not one of the things that I'm familiar, that my experience of myself is through identification, not through not being someone, right?
And yes, so, yes. And I think Sherry's also said that, and how, you know, these daydreams or wishings for, like, some sudden full awakening that might seem nice could be, just like you're saying, could be, like, really too much, could be really terrifying from the perspective that I am usually in allegiance with.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and we have to practice the movement from the dark room to the light room, and we have to also practice what it feels like to be in the light room, because it's not something that we're familiar with. I mean, that's what receiving, that whole month about receiving, it was about, right? That there is a way in which we are that we have to practice having and tuning to, and getting, within quotes, comfortable with, because we spend so much time in an unnatural state of identification that we have to get used to our natural state. I mean, I'm using words to point to something here, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay, because that's also part of our practice trajectory.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought for a while, and the questions here are good at kind of, again, examining the logic and how it's kind of, you know, filled with holes that, you know, but I have, placed, again, I think, like, the word allegiance kind of in this ego identity, despite the fact that it continues to do what it purports to do. So anyways, I'm going to keep taking at least some small steps out into whatever else there is.
Mm. And maybe not so small, right, Justin? I think that is what we're constantly questioning, is no step is insignificant.
Yeah.
And it all contributes to wearing away what you call allegiance, which is, you know, whatever from the beginning of beginningless time, the karma that you're carrying around. And it's a worthy opponent. And so there is a way in which you show up every moment, and for every moment that you're here in that light room, in the abyss, whatever you want to call it, you have ended suffering for all human beings in that moment. That's not trivial in the least.
I hadn't thought of it that way. Right. For all human beings.
Yes, because there is no self and other when you're here. right? It's only just here. It's just pure awareness. And so that ability, again, not to let the conditioning frame your narrative, that's participation, right? Here in this moment, suffering has ended when I'm here in this moment. And then the next moment I might be identified, but the moment after that, I'm here again. It's only that narrative of continuity that seems to point to you've never achieved that state, or never will, or it's a state even to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's
a horizon there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's exactly. And to participate the way you're participating, which is to show up for yourself and for practice, is moving the horizon from somewhere far away to here, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's moving.
It is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So put yourself in the queue again, Justin.
Thanks, I will.
All right, you take care.
You too. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin. And Shwini, there's something that's kind of comforting in knowing that no matter where we are on the trajectory of practice, self-hate isn't going to like it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the comforting part is we're here, wherever we are, right? Trajectory is just, it's a label, yeah.
Yeah, where we are, we are, and mm-hmm. yeah, and self-hate is always going to be what it is, and so, yeah. All right, well, great. That brings us to the end of the show, Shwini, mm-hmm. and our assignment for today. Self-hate negates what we are by focusing the attention on what we're not. I'm talked into identifying with what's wrong with me. I am told that I have to meet standards that fix or change me, that make me better the way I should be to be acceptable and lovable. Yet meeting those standards doesn't get me the approval or acceptance or love that I have assumed I will receive if I meet the standards. This whole orientation misses the point. What we are being conned into believing is that our inherent goodness is conditional, that authentic nature is dependent upon performance. So attention is taken away from the perfection of authentic nature and turned to an ego-maintaining, dualistic conversation that causes us to believe our acceptance is conditional. Assignment. Make a recording that allows you to be in touch with the perfection of the true nature that is you. Listen to this recording as a way of training to stay with the realization of true nature rather than falling for the negation of the self-hating conversation. All right. Well, thank you very much, Shwini.
Thank you, Chris. Go happy.
And go happy, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.